And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, we're not alone.
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. This is Martin Willis, your host, and we have a great show coming up for you this evening. With our guest, a good friend of mine out in the Chicago area, Sam Maranto. You may remember him as Sam helped out here between the UFO newscasters. And he'll be coming up after Alejandro Rojas from Open Minds Radio is going to be telling us about the latest UFO events. We have some new T-shirts available on our website, and they're pretty awesome. They have a great image, UFO Crash Site by James Nathan. He has given us the rights to use that image. And so for $25 right on our website, you can buy a T-shirt, all different sizes, free shipping. We'll have to work out European shipping and around the world. I don't know what the cost will be for that, but we'll figure that out. Check it out on Podcast UFO. Well, what better place does anyone have to complain but on their own podcast? And last week, I had moved our domain, podcastufo.com, to a dedicated server because of traffic. And if you're a subscriber through Joyride, that will not affect you in any way. It didn't affect you last week. But if you're a regular listener on our website or on iTunes, Stitcher, and all that, I do apologize. The show just went up on Monday, last Wednesday after the last podcast. I couldn't upload the podcast because of the new server settings, and I spent most of the night with the host, Gator, trying to figure that out. And it never got fixed, and I spent at least 10 hours with our customer service and tech over the last week and finally got fixed on Monday. I'm still having a lot of syntax errors, name server errors, and all that stuff, but I think it will be okay for now. I was accidentally hung up on 5 times by HostGator support. And each time it went into a survey asking if I would recommend HostGator to a friend. Let me just say this. I wouldn't want to recommend them to an enemy at this point. I'm really upset with this whole situation. Hopefully it'll be ironed out and the show will get straightened out. And just one more thing before we bring Alejandro on. If you want to subscribe to hear the second hour as a podcast, go to getjoyride.com/podcastufo. The link is right on our website as well. Subscribers pay $1 a month or more to access the full 2-hour show, and that includes a private link you can use for iTunes, on your iPhone, and all kinds of media players. And if you have any questions or problems, just email me at martin@podcastufo.com. And by the way, my email is not quite straightened out. It's almost fixed. I am getting some of the emails. And so hopefully all will be straightened out, and that's enough complaining for me, but boy, does it feel good. Alejandro, was that too much?
No.
It was okay?
Yeah.
I'm not a real Debbie Downer.
No, I'm not bummed at all by that. Unfortunately, good customer service is hard to come by.
Yeah. It's been something else. But anyway, hopefully it'll be all set. And let's talk about what's going on out there. You're getting busy and ready for the upcoming UFO Congress. I'm making arrangements to be out there. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, so am I. I'm really excited. I think I've said this before. I just love, you know, these people being able to share their information, you know, people that you've interviewed. And, you know, I think it's hit or miss always, just like when you have someone on you don't know, I think it's a good thing to do. Someone who does some work, but you're not familiar with them or you know, how well they're able to articulate their work. But there's so many times where you're pleasantly surprised, and I love just featuring the great hard work by so many people out there, you know, that are really into this topic and take it very seriously. So it's always really exciting. You know, we always like to present people that aren't out there on the circuit. I think it's unfortunate that most of the conferences have the same people because they're just so fearful of having someone different.
Mm-hmm.
So I love doing that. And often, you know, the speakers that we have end up being the new people on the circuit, bringing in new blood. I think maybe some of the people who are regular on the circuit maybe get frustrated by that. But, you know, it's fair and it's good. And some of them who are genuine, you know, researchers and love the field are happy to have new blood coming in and sharing new information and new perspectives. So I'm extremely excited mainly to share the information with people, and we have a lot of great speakers.
Yeah, I've always tried to get unique and new speakers on this show. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes, you know, I watch the downloads. Sometimes the downloads aren't that popular, but still, you know, I just think it is good to shine a new light on, you know, the subject when you find someone new.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I found, and you probably do too, we've got kind of an audience who's going to be there no matter what. And that's what's great. They'll listen. Maybe they won't like it, and they'll say that, and you'll have a little bit of a less listeners and, you know, maybe get some feedback. But what's great is often, you know, they'll still give it a chance because they like listening to the show. And then they're happily surprised by, you know, how great someone is or the great information that they have. And you're introducing someone new to people, and that's awesome.
Well, I got to tell you, ever since I've been – on your show way back, I think it was a year and a half ago, my yeah. show has instantly grew up by one third for downloads wow. right after that. And so I think we share awesome. A lot of the same listeners. Matter of fact, someone emailed yeah. me the other day. They said they're kind of listening to the same UFO news twice, but they don't care.
That is funny. But and it's with a different you know, straight guy, because you're my straight guy on this, and Jason is on our show. So that means it's different jokes, a little slightly different sense of humor, but and different takes on the, because then you'll have, you know, interesting questions regarding the news that, of course, we wouldn't have on our show. So it's still good, and I agree with you. I think we have a similar sensibility to this. We agree so much on and have similar perspectives on the whole thing.
Righto. So what is going on this week? Has it been a busy week?
It's been an interesting week. It has been somewhat busy, and it's been a real weird, interesting week, which is good. So, yeah, I have a couple sightings and then a kind of a new cool story and that has to do with John Greenwald. So, but something completely different than what's been going on here.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, few stories here. So the first one I want to talk about is a UFO sighting outside of Roswell, New Mexico. So this is exciting. This was December 27th. This was written up by Roger Marsh, who is the director of communications for MUFON, who writes about MUFON stories or sightings on our website. And this one took place December 27th. It was a guy driving in an RV. I guess he's driving across country. I don't think he gave details there. But he's outside of town, and he sees something, you know, 50, 60 feet off the ground. And he's wondering what the heck this thing is. Eventually, he thought then it was a large metal bar, but as he got closer, he said he could tell it was a large triangle. It moved down to about 25 feet off the ground, and it was there for a while him and his wife were looking, or his sister was sitting back there looking at this UFO, wondering what the hell this is. He finally realized, oh, man, I've got my camera right over here. He goes to grab the camera, and it's gone. So, yeah, really interesting sighting right outside of Roswell.
Isn't this like 2 weeks in a row someone that happened to? No, the other guy got pictures, but when he put gas in his car, the thing took off or something.
Yeah, exactly. He got a picture, but the object was really far off, and so you couldn't really make much out of the picture. But, yeah, he felt that was a triangular-shaped object as well. So it does seem, and we've got some more stories, it does seem like there's a lot of triangular UFO sightings out these days.
It does. You know, I think the saucer went out of style, went out of fashion.
Yeah.
And yep. The new model, the 2015 in our time, model is the triangle.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people say, no, those are government. But, you know, it's been, in my experience, because I've done a lot of research here, these ideas that we're flying these triangles that can hover and then move off quickly, there's no evidence that we are creating something like this. There's this kind of urban legend of something called the TR-3B. But there was a TR-3A that was a prototype kind of ship, but and that's known. You can go look that up. But there is no TR-3B that's known about, and that there has been no evidence that something like that's been developed. So these are unexplained objects, these triangular UFOs. We don't know where they come from.
Yeah. So what else is happening?
Yeah, and a location of another big UFO case, that's the Rendlesham Forest. There's a video that was posted to YouTube of these three balls of lights. They kind of flash. There's a military helicopter following these three balls of lights around, and kind of a weird video. However, a lot of people are very skeptical about this video. It's one of these things where it's posted on YouTube on an account that was just created. So it seems like this account was just created only to post this video, and a lot of people are feeling like, a lot of researchers are feeling like this could be in preparation for a new movie coming out called The UFO Rendlesham Incident, and this is a fiction movie about the Rendlesham Forest, and they even say it's not about the original things, but it's about, you know, UFOs and aliens chasing people in the forest or something. And so a lot of people feel this is probably a publicity thing for that upcoming movie.
Wow. Was there also a sighting in Phoenix? Phoenix Lights?
Well,
no.
There was that whole publicity thing recently.
Oh, that's
and
right.
It's funny you say that. Because, yeah, remember not too long ago, this David Collins guy, and we called him, he tweeted us trying to convince us otherwise. But there was a story that came out recently. Well, they wrote a press release about this movie coming out, and they even said, we've been doing some viral stuff to try to get this movie out there for marketing, and we're going to be doing some more. And it confirmed that that was some marketing for their movie. So, yeah, they're going to be doing more, so we're going to have to be on the lookout for that.
For sure, sure. So what else is happening?
So the final story, and this is really cool, the Black Vault, we most recently talked about that with the Blue Book Files, but John Greenwald, who runs this, they have something else that they got going on here. The Black Vault is helping to sponsor a UFO detector software. So this software, assuming it works, is really cool. So it's created by this these people called Project CE. The CE stands for Connecting Evidence. They want to remain, again, anonymous in the creation of this. But this is a program you can download and install on your computer. And then what it'll do is you take your USB webcam, you put it out your window, and this thing will monitor the webcam. And whenever something comes flies across the screen, it will analyze it to find out if it's like a bird or a plane. If it doesn't know what it is, it'll record the video of this thing so you can look at it later. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty cool. So what they're doing with this software, too, is they want you to submit, like if it records an object, and you're like, well, that's obviously a bird. You can submit a picture of that object to the developers so they can adjust the software so it's more and more accurate, so it doesn't get what they call false positives. So it doesn't record birds and mundane things, but it only captures videos of UFOs. It records in high definition, and it's a free download. So
I was just going to ask you how much it was.
Yeah, absolutely free. Yep.
Wow.
So really cool. So this is exciting, especially if it works. Hopefully it, you know, it may help people get a lot more really good UFO videos. So it can record day, night. You can have this thing running all day and night. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get hook up a webcam and do this at home and have it just, you know, monitoring above my apartment complex and see what I can get. But real easy to use. I've got some screenshots here. I have links to the Project CE site, but John Greenwald has a support site on the Black Vault for this that has some really good instructions. And he also has a forum, because part of this is they want to create a community where people are submitting their videos. Everybody's kind of analyzing the videos as a community, and then also giving feedback, asking questions, so we can together kind of investigate and find some good videos.
Awesome. I wonder if this thing will record a flying squirrel if it went across. I bet it would.
It probably would, but it wouldn't. Hopefully it wouldn't save the video, because it's not a UFO. That would be an identified flying... That would be an IFS, an identified flying squirrel.
I'm only saying this because I'm squirrel-infested up here in the mountain. I have squirrels
of every
type.
Squirrels. Squirrels are fun.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Back soon.
Stay tuned after this tune by Bruce Rainier, and this is Sam Maranto coming up. Welcome back, Sam.
Wow. That was interesting.
The music?
Yeah. And the conversation with Alejandro.
Yes, always. It's a pleasure having him on. And it's a pleasure having you back. For those who have not heard Sam before, if you're a new listener, Sam helped out for a while on the show. He's been a guest a couple of times and always has a lot of fascinating things to say, a lot of fun. I consider him a good friend. And I'm glad you're doing well. What's going on in the Midwest?
Well, I tell you what, if the old boy could just stay on his 2 feet, he'd be doing better. I tell you, on Tuesdays, my new routine is to schedule myself to fall. I fell yesterday on ice. I did this little thing like, I don't know, it was kind of weird. And it's a miracle I didn't break a shoulder in the process, but sure enough, black ice got me. Last week did a similar thing without the ice. Somehow I forgot to, remember there was 18 inches of stairs between my next step and took a spill there. But I tell you, the winter has been unusually peaceful for the most part, and so have the reports. So the reports that have been coming in, none of which have fallen into our lap, being very gracefully unique and just so stunning that we have to run out and leave our mucklucks in the, in the closet because they're so interesting. But we are getting some reports, many of them having to do with, of course, lights in the sky. And, the thing is, the notorious lights in the sky, anything at a distance could seem peculiar depending on your perspective and, of course, your bias. The other thing that we get is, of course, the complete opposite, that it's mundane. That, of course, just because it's out there and it does seem unusual and it is moving unusual, well, it's just something very prosaic. And that, the thing is, it doesn't hurt to file a report, especially if we find out that somebody closer noticed something a little more unusual because of their perspective. And then that other case can add, or I should say report, because it doesn't really become a case until it's investigated. That report adds a little more credence, possibly, to the better perspective or observation. So folks out there that may be hesitant to file a report, you know, if there's some merit that they feel it's worthwhile, go to MUFON.com, file a report, and you're going to get a call back, and either way you'll get some idea what you did not see or what you may have seen.
You know, Sam, the last show I announced that, well, I quietly said that I've been hesitant to talk about second sighting because I feel like, you know, I've talked many times about the sighting I had, but I was feeling like if I mentioned that I saw something else unusual, that it would hurt my cred a little bit. I got, I think, about 4 or 5 emails of people saying, go ahead, tell me what did you see? So,
sure.
So I'm just going to say it. And it could be, as you're saying, could be something totally prosaic, something, but it was kind of hard to explain. I was walking in a golf course at night. I was living on a golf course about a year ago. Yes, a year ago. And so I was out at night, and I saw what I thought was, it looked like the size of like a star moving. And I thought, well, it's a big satellite. And then I thought, wow, it's a real big satellite. And but it was moving like one. And so I was thinking, well, this thing's so big, it's got to be the International Space Station or something. I just couldn't figure out what it was. And then all of a sudden, it did these couple of weird maneuvers. And I go, oh, my God, I'm not really seeing this, am I? And so I took out my iPhone I had at the time and filmed it. And I looked at when I got home, you could just barely see this little line, you know, moving. But you couldn't tell whether it was a camera shake or, you know, it was actually moving in the sky. So that was so I won't get any more email, I don't think, about that. I'm not going to say it was unidentified to me, but I don't know what it was. But it was nothing like the first sighting I had, or possibly only real sighting I had.
Did you talk about that much? Because that is a good sighting.
Oh yeah, yeah. I brought that up for the listener who hasn't heard. I don't want to, you know, keep repeating myself. But basically, I was in a hot tub, and yes, I got teased about that. Was not drinking at the time, and this perfectly shaped disc with a little bluish silver tint came right over me. And the thing that I had never heard about or known about at the time was it made absolutely no sound. And to me, that was the most baffling. I kept waiting to hear something. And then it took off on a right angle toward Monterey. I was in Carmel Valley, California. Took off toward Monterey, and I called the police department, and I was sort of ridiculed about it and put on hold for 20 minutes and hung up. So that's basically the whole ordeal. But whatever it was, it certainly was nothing that I had could ever call that was something earthly. You know, it would be, if it was, then it's being kept totally secret from us out there.
Well, you know, I had a call once. I had a conversation with a lady who was a secretary and pertaining to some business I was working on at that time. And she was telling me about an experience she had in, I'm trying to think of where it was. Oh, it was Malibu. And it was between, it was near the coast, between two mountains or whatever in that vicinity. And they decided to have a fire in the evening. They built this fire. And they just get it started, and then it was some ways, you know, off from the cabin that belonged to some friends of theirs. Not necessarily that far, but, you know, within close walking distance. They just started, and all of a sudden, they seen these two points of light appearing at intervals, let's say almost parallel, over the peaks of the two mountains on each side of them. And they watched it, and what had happened is they started to head towards each other, to, you know, to becoming directly overhead. And then, and when they they became directly overhead, while they were moving up, they began to hear the coyotes yiping and yelling and carrying on. Then all of a sudden, as this progression of these two lights start to come together, there was this buzzing of, like, they said it was as if they were being swarmed by insects or bees. And I've heard this many a time. Wow. In close encounters or being at very close a close proximity to a object such as a UFO, a genuine UFO. And it's progressing and progressing. Then all of a sudden, when they come together directly overhead, there's this humongous beam of light that just shines down, and it's just, wow. And all of a sudden, they feel they were knocked out, wake up, look at each other, and running out of the house is the woman who owned the place, and she goes, "What was that? What happened? What happened?" And they all look at her, and they look down, and the fire that they had just started, this huge, you know, bonfire, was nothing but ashes and cinder.
So they had the time missing time. That's very much like the Allagash incident.
Yes, yes, very much. In fact, when she was telling me that, I was thinking of the very same case. And they swore to each other, Martin, that they would never tell anybody about this. And how I befriend her to at least gain her confidence into talking about this was the week prior. I have nocturnal cognition. And for a series of nights, it was really being active on unusual things. And usually I would wake up and I would say a few words, Sam's, you know, gibberish in the morning, but they were all relevant to what transpired further on in the day. And I woke up that day and I said, "Red cat." And Julie's looking at me and she's like, "Red cat?" I go, "I don't know what it is, but it's something. It has something to do with something." So this very same person, mind you, now this is like a week or two earlier, we start talking, and she was a secretary, so she was the person I had to go through to talk to. I had a business relationship with, and so we got to talk quite a bit, and we start talking, you know, all sorts of things. And I says, "Well, what did you do this weekend?" She goes, "You'd never guess what happened to me. I was by my friend's house, and her cat had kittens. And they were all just so beautiful, but one in particular was just so unusual. You never guess what color it was." Huh. And I go, "Red." And all of a sudden there was this lull. And she goes, "How did you know that?"
Wow.
And from that point on, we started talking about unusual experiences, paranormal experiences, or experiences working at a haunted hotel up on, I believe it was in Oregon, and it was interesting to hear about it. And then soon later, I think it was no more than 6 months ago, I actually seen something on one of the shows pertaining to the very location she was at and she was telling me about. It was very interesting.
So this woman eventually told you about this amazing sighting you were just
yes,
talking about?
Yes, and that was the last time I got to speak to her. But the way she built it up, and you could tell she was actually afraid to talk about it, but she gave it in such details that, you know, when somebody describes something, and this, I think, goes back to the value of the oral tradition. It's so inbred into us. I think it's part of our physiology more so than our psychology. Who knows? But, you know, I think this goes way back to sitting around the campfire and telling stories. And when she's painting this picture with her beautiful words, I get this whole image and the sound. I know the sound. I know the sound of what she was talking about. And I can relate to this, the sound of the swarming sound of bees or insects around here and the yiping of coyotes. These are things I can relate to. And in the background, hearing the crackling of the fire, then all of a sudden to this apex, there's these two adjoining lights and an instant beam, and I could just feel the energy because I've been there. I know what she's talking about. And I know many people out there listening to us right now can relate to it, if not so in a personal experience, but maybe somebody they know.
Yeah, well, I don't remember the details of your sighting, but I just wanted to say to the live listener out there right now, you can jump in our chat room if you'd like to send Sam a question or talk between yourselves, whatever. It's at podcastufo.com, right on the sidebar, two clicks to get in. And Sam and I are going to be talking about UFOs in general, some Illinois and Midwestern UFO encounters over the years. And then in the second hour, what did you say we're going to do? We're going to get freaky?
We're going to talk about the freaky.
Okay. So so stay tuned for that. And if you're not a subscriber, for only $1 a month, which is about 23 cents a week, you can listen to the full show if you're just listening to this part on a podcast. So, Sam, from here, would you like to talk about I want you to tell me why you know about this this buzzing sound. Did you have a similar experience?
Yes, I've had a similar experience years back when I was a child. I was having what we probably refer to as encounters. These beings and whatever else was out there. This is the sound I heard. This was prior to having tinnitus, and I hear it all the time, but it's a different version of the buzzing. This is more of a ringing tinnitus, but it's like whirling insects around you, and you could hear it, and it's the sound of it isn't, okay, for those of you with tinnitus, you know it's a constant buzzing sound, but imagine insects. If you've ever been near a beehive or something mm-hmm. like that, but magnified, you know, much greater and swirling around you, where there's depth and you feel that there's motion going on. So this was going on around them. And the yiping of coyotes. During the Tinley Park case, to allude to that right real quick, there was yiping. And in fact, in some of the video footage, we actually had the dogs barking. And people said, oh, it's because there were people around. No, it wasn't because people around. They were barking at a distance, too. And it seemed like they were all yiping and barking. And further off in the parks or some of these hollows where you have lakes and stuff, you could hear them howling, the coyotes howling. So something was getting their attention, and this was prior to these things being directly overhead where they were able to see them, the illuminations of the potentially what could possibly a massive triangle or some unusually massive object. Now, other sounds that some people were getting interference, as you recall, on the FM band on their, it was like a Nextel phone with radio. And they were getting interference. In fact, those Nextel phones didn't work when it came to that radio mode. Some people were actually getting some unusual chatter and talk on baby monitors. And because they had just seen, what was the movie, Signs? So, you know, it's funny how movies do reflect actual things that take place in this field. So this was going on. Now, as far as the swirling sounds, no one heard that I heard. You know, I never heard anybody mentioning it in that case. But in other cases, yes, where people were close to objects or the object seemed to come down upon them. And many a time you hear about this very brilliant light shining down and enveloping them, whether tractor beams or whatever transpires. One thing that does take place with anything that's altering gravity, and we think that this is part of the science behind the physics behind the unidentified or the actual thing. You're going to have an effect on time. It does affect time. And the same thing with genuine crop glyphs / crop circles or whatever. You get reports of the effect of time loss or time altered. One other thing that I don't know if I ever talked to you about, the time lost seems to be regained at some point as if it's elastic, like stretching out a rubber band.
Now, I've never heard that before.
This is kind of strange. On three instances, and I'll tell you two of them. Part of the case that we'll be talking about later is what I refer to as the freaky. A gentleman who is one of the key figures in this case that I worked on for many years. He was, where was this at? In up by, oh, he was leaving from northern Wisconsin going to, close to Lake Superior. He was some ways off, but yet not as long as his trip actually ended up taking. It was a well plotted and known length and time as far as his journey. This guy sees a triangular UFO by the side of the road, pulls over and watches this thing just sitting there next to a barn. It was large. It wasn't a massive one that was miles long, but one that, you know, obviously very big, hundreds of feet. It had below the exterior and the bottom what would be like if you were to take a ping pong ball, cut it in half and place it near each corner and have it swirling around with self-luminous iridescence or opalescence, like shampoo or something like that, an opalescence yellowish-white color, but brilliant. And he says that's what it looked like. And that object sat there for some length of time. He was just, you know, it just sat there. And he says easily he could have spent 10 minutes. Then he jumped back in his car. The thing was still there. You know, he was just like, wow. He's trying to get as much observation. He drew it. You know, he drew the object. Well, it gets to his point of destination, but it was some 3 hours later than was not what normally have taken him. His wife had called over there, deathly afraid to see what the end result was, why he was missing. But here, all it was a loss of time. Now, was there an encounter during that period of time? Maybe, but 3 hours was lost. So, within a week or two after this experience, he lived in Michigan at the time. Excuse me, Minnesota at the time. He had to cut the lawn, and he had to do some other errands. His wife had to do the same. And he's out there, and he knew how long it would take. And the time element would have came out to approximately 3 hours to do everything he needed to do. And here he had everything done within a period of a half hour. So the wife and the both of them came together, and they go, wait a minute, how can this be? They looked at the time, you know, from the time they started, and the both of them finishing their chores, and they knew how long it would have taken, and they knew when it started, and they go, no, that just can't be. And sure enough, that time that was missing for him came back, but in this instance came back for both of them.
Wow.
Another time, a gentleman, or it was actually a woman coming from Wyoming to visit her elderly father in Dixon, Illinois, and traveling down I-88, which was at that time I-5, I believe. And coming in, she's on the road, and she notices up ahead some brilliant illuminations, and she thought it was just some sort of tower. As she's getting closer and closer, what it is not standing directly over the middle of the road, but moved off to her right into a farm field. And there was this unusual object, a UFO, with illuminations underneath it, and it was hovering directly over the ground. She pulls over. Her children are just terrified, a boy and a girl in the back seat, terrified. She gets out, and she's just staring at this and staring at it. And she says, there are cars going past me. And it's like I'm in my own world. Nobody else is paying attention. And not only are they not paying attention to the object in the field, they aren't paying attention to me. I'm waving people and pointing to this, and they're not paying attention to me as if I'm not even there.
Wow, like a dead ghost or something.
Exactly. They get back in the car. She looks down as she takes off, and she realizes the time she had spent out there was substantially more than the time that she actually knew she was out there. She shows up at the father's house and says, why are you? And the father says, what took you so long? You called me from this junction, wherever she was in the last call, and here you are here. So much later than you normally would. She tells him what she saw and whatever, but it wouldn't account for a large amount of time, something around an hour. And so she gets back to Wyoming the very next week. Very next week, she gets to go back to work. She kisses her husband in the morning, closes the door, and off she goes. She gets to work, and as always, she calls him. And as she states her point from the distance, you know, the travel time is approximately an hour from the house to work. She calls him up. He grabs the phone, and he says, who is this? You know, and she says, well, it's me. I'm here at work. And he goes and says, that is absolutely impossible. You just kissed me, and I could still hear the door that had slammed.
Ooh. Wow. That's freaky.
Very freaky.
Yeah.
And
we're supposed to save the freaky stuff for hour two.
Oh, it gets better. So there seems to be this effect of time space by these encounters. So, and I don't think it's psychological because apparently it's recorded in, say, for instance, even the mechanics of a clock or a watch. So there is some sort of recordable variance that even affects, mechanisms. The case of the UFO car case of Val Johnson's case back in the 80s, his car was hit by what was either an energy beam or actually some extension that was self-luminous from an object or whatever. Or even some sort of unusual natural phenomena that may very well possess a similar type of energy and residual effect. It hit the car. I'm not sure if... Are you aware of this case?
No, unless it's the one in Australia.
No, this is the one in Minnesota.
Okay.
And Vels... He was a police officer, and he was actually on a dispatch to see what was going on out there. People reporting some unusual things, I think it was just a regular routine ride. And he sees this object at a distance, this illumination. Didn't know it was an object, and to this date, we don't know. But we, you know, whatever it is, it has the properties to bend things and affect things, so it's able to cause some damage. This thing came right at him, and... he says it felt like he was hit by a 200-pound pillow. He was knocked out. He woke up. His eyes were out of focus and painful. He says it felt as if I had had welder's flash. And for those of you who have ever encountered welder's flash, it's very painful. So just thinking of it now, it hurts. And then he says... the car was sitting sideways. The windshield was damaged, but it was imploded, like the energy pulled it out and in simultaneously. Ford, I think it was Ford Motor Company, a laboratory over there he said there was at least 800 pages of final text on the series of tests that they ran on it and other groups, and they said you could actually get the result in the laboratory But you have to do it independently, and it would take at least two processes, not at once and instantaneously. So whatever happened was, you know, no doubt a phenomena and something they couldn't understand. And the other thing is the physical effect of him. His eyes were burnt. His face, and he had as if it looked like a second-degree burn throughout his face and exposed area. He was red. It almost reminds you of Close Encounters. The enamel on his teeth were damaged.
Wow.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for that to happen, I would think.
Oh, sure. The enamel is one of the most, you know, one of the strongest parts, you know, as far as hardest parts of the body. It's the enamel of teeth. And here he has all these cracks and, you know, hairline cracks. The antenna, which was on a springed mechanism, so when it would hit something out there in the, you know, out in Minnesota, a lot of things besides deer and birds and twigs, you're going into areas. You can lose an antenna once a week and you're going into some of these areas. So they have a spring, and I think you've seen them at the bottom of spring mechanism, so it bends. Mm-hmm. So if anything were to have hit it, it would have bent. It would have, you know, wouldn't have damaged it. Well, there was nearly a 45-degree angle bend. It was about 38 degrees. I forget the exact amount of degrees in the antenna itself. The other interesting thing is the insect crust that was on the exterior of the antenna, where it's, you know, was just caked up bug juice that hardened, was actually molded around it as if it was superheated instead of cracked.
Huh.
Very unusual.
Really strange.
And then he looked at his watch, and the watch and the clock in the car were exactly the same time off. In other words, they were both the same, but off. I think it was 15 minutes or 18 minutes. I think it was 18 minutes. They both were precisely off 18 minutes. In other words, they were the same, and he always kept a correct time. That's the first thing he did. He drove off in the morning, was to check the time and have it correct in the car and on his watch before he went on his patrol. And this is one of the best physical trace cases. The car itself is in, I forget, is it Madison County Fairgrounds? Is that it?
I think I know of this case now. It took a while, but yes. I think this was actually investigated on a show.
A couple of them.
Yeah.
But I think I have the only video interview with Phil Johnson. I think I'm the only person who has a video interview with him.
Now, is that online where anybody can see it?
No. In fact, hopefully I'm going to get approval after I edit it to get a right to release it in, along with volumes of things that I've accumulated in the last 20 years. So, and when I do that, I'll make sure to premiere some of the excerpts from it on your show, okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Love that. So, let's see. We have about 10 minutes left. And I wanted to talk about a couple of cases. You know, we've talked about Tinley Park, and oftentimes the O'Hare sighting comes up. But let's talk about some of the obscure ones. I was looking in some of the top Illinois encounters over the years. And how about the Franklin Park sighting? Are you familiar with that one?
I think Dr. Rodiger worked on that one. I didn't work on it at all.
Okay. Well, that one's basically, it was Boy Scouts, and they saw, you know, metallic pulsing saucer about 20 feet in diameter. That was interesting. So what are some of the other ones that you have worked on besides, Rockford? Didn't you work on that?
Yes, the Rockford mass sighting.
And that was a mass sighting, and I think there was hundreds of people that saw it, and it was orange orbs or something like that, right?
It was seen on, well, what it was a mass sighting that started actually on New Year's Eve of 1999. Everybody, of course, had the the 2000 millennium concern.
Oh, yes.
About all the computers going down and everything going haywire and, oh, no, the world's going to end, all that kind of stuff.
I remember that.
Yeah, you probably had have stuff stashed away somewhere from that, don't you?
No, but you know what? I don't want to get way off topic, but I knew a guy that bought a 250-gallon oil tank, put diesel in it, got the generator. He had machine guns. Oh my God, was he? He was pretty scary. And then, like 2 weeks later, he dropped out of a heart attack.
Oh my God!
So it didn't really help him too much.
I think it was just an excuse for him to do it. He wanted to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Not the heart attack, mind you. But all the other toys. Honey, this is a good reason. I really got to get this now. You know, okay, Harold, just get the darn thing.
Oh, had stores of food. He had, like, tons and tons of food. Was buying food for a year.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah. A lot of people did that. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, my brother did too. In fact, funny thing, we mentioned it. He was looking at the rations that he had stored away. He goes, "I'm wondering if these are any good." I go, "I don't know, but I'm not going to try it."
Oh, you mean he still has them?
Yeah, I forgot what the shelf life on some of this stuff was. Pretty. He had a great. He's really good at keeping things organized that way. Me, I tell you, anything chaotic comes along, I guess I'm screwed, you know? Anyway, you look at it. I don't know. Yeah. I'm the first one to go.
Yeah. Well, but, I know the place I own up on the mountain there, the people were absolutely paranoid as well. And there's a bomb shelter. There's a fire system with a water tower. I mean, you know, and the indoor pool was hooked into it. I mean, they were just... They are ready for everything. Pretty amazing.
That's pretty kind of. I tell you what, that is kind of neat, but you have to admit, it is kind of neat.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe just play crazy like that for a weekend, have a party. Who knows?
Well, there was tornado warnings last summer, and I went down into the bomb shelter, so that was kind of cool to have, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, out here, we have tornado warnings. You do want to go low because they do hit. I don't know how many tornadoes you get out in your neck of the woods, but we
very rare.
Yeah. Out here, it's like Tornado Alley. We were shooting Invasion, Illinois, and I had secured a property for us to shoot at. In fact, a gentleman's a county police officer, a sergeant, and that owned the property. So we got out there, Bill Burns, most of these guys are from the, you know, East Coast and West Coast, and they've never seen anything like tornadoes, and we had like three of them that evening. They were just shooken by, just like, wow, Sam, this is, you know, and they're going, this really is Tornado Alley. I go, yeah, it is. And I remember the sound guy putting on the, you know, here he's listening to make sure the audio's correct, and he's got the mics. All of a sudden, this crack of lightning goes right outside, just, you know, couple hundred feet away, and instantaneous roar of thunder throughout the pole barn that we were in. This poor guy, the cans on his head just popped right off. He didn't have to lift them. And he's like, ah! You know, I'm like, whoa.
That sounds that good.
Yeah. We got that. That sounds perfect.
So it tell was. Me about that. Was that a series, or was that a one-time documentary, or what?
That was the first episode. In fact, you'll see it if you ever watch the repeats on the History Channel of UFO Hunters. That was 2001.
Oh,
Invasion.
Bill Burns, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I worked on five episodes as a consultant, but the ones that I actually had a chance to cameo in, of course, were the ones that I was actually involved on as investigative researcher, and that would have been Tinley Park, and that's Invasion, Illinois. Aliens at the airport, that was the O'Hare case, in conjunction with other UFO cases at airports and related to aviation. So that was good. That was a very good episode. That, you know, the funny thing is, it was a great show. It was starting to lose... I could see it, you know, in the end, it was starting to lose its appeal. And they were already, I think, working on Ancient Aliens. They had that, maybe even had the pilot in the can. I don't know. They may have already had that, you know. And the other thing is, consider what took the time slot was Pawn Stars. My God, that is one of the best shows on television, period. I mean, what are we going into, our seventh season on that one? My God, I wish I was involved in that.
Yeah. That's rigged, by the way.
It's rigged, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I have inside news on that. That's a whole nother story. I don't want to get too far off topic.
Oh, about that.
But, yeah.
I'm assuming they have to, because people with that much interesting stuff just don't make their way into pawn shops one right after another for an episode. You'd have to sit around all day,
yeah,
and that's costly.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, there's sometime off air, I'll tell you that there's a real funny story about a specialist that I know that they hired, and they talked verbatim exactly like the words she wrote. It was pretty funny. But let's see, we got about 5 minutes left, and I want you to tell us a little bit about the Rockford sighting, you know, some details on that.
The
one.
Detail about the Rockford sighting, you know, and this is a very significant mass sighting, one that just fell off the face of the earth, and it all ties in with the Southern Illinois sighting, which ties into the Tinley Park sighting. These objects that we're seeing may very well have been the large triangular objects, the same. But this happened in, like I said, going into 2000, and as you know, January 4th and January 5th of that year was the sightings down in Southern Illinois that got all the attention, simply because of it was being, you know, being followed and reported by police officers. Strangely enough, up in Rockford, we had not just hundreds of witnesses, but thousands of witnesses on multiple nights. There was as many as 13 nights of mass sightings, 9 of which that we feel have merit, and at least 5 of those genuine. There were photographs taken. These photographs are relatively similar to other craft that have been recorded, and there is videotape. Again, you have these illuminations in the sky. You have orange orbs, and they're not conventional aircraft. The other thing was, during this sighting, we had other sightings going on in the Midwest, out in the Quad Cities, and all over the world, even on the island of Man. So that night was pretty active all over the world. What the heck was going on? I have no idea. But apparently, maybe they got the bug too, like, oh no, our computers are going to go down, we're going to crash. I don't know. Either way, things were going on that could not be accountable as conventional, or Chinese lanterns, or flares on balloons, all that malarkey. Though I think at least 3 of those were hoaxes later on. But you know, during that whole episode, we had a meeting, at a Borders, I think it was Borders bookstore. We had 80 some people show up. The press was there, and people were. It got to the point we couldn't even get enough people. Good enough accommodate the people that were there. It was just crazy. And when they were there, people were telling us stories of accounts that had nothing to do with this, how for years they had sightings out there. And little did I know, but the history of UFO sightings on the borderline area, in the Rockford area, Rockdale, now all this area, they go way back. They go back well before 1947, though 1947 was a peak year too. But some farmers, these old farmers in their 80s, were telling us of accounts that they seen things in their land, in their fields, and they knew about their parents talking about things landing in the fields and flying around that were UFOs, flying saucers, whatever you want to call them. So this was a hot area that's ignored by most people because, of course, it's Illinois. And if you're within, you know, a mile or two of a Farm and Fleet or some farm implement store, of course, you know, you're just wacky. That's the attitude some of these people take. And what I find interesting, Similar events took place, of course, in Jersey soon thereafter, in Newark in July, and the Carteret sightings. You may have seen heard about the mass sightings, Carteret. This is the same thing that went on during that same period of time. But yet that got credence. This didn't get as much. But yet, further south, when the police officers saw them, you know, just a day later or 4 days later, it became big news. And, of course, Discovery Channel did a special on it. Daryl Barker did a very good documentary and still does, finding more witnesses to this case down there in southern Illinois.
Wow. All right. Well, Sam, well, that's the first hour. So, again, we're going into the kind of the freaky, weird stuff in hour two. And why don't you say goodbye to the hour one listeners, if you would.
Well, hour one listeners, tell you what, buy your next hour because it's going to be well worth it, and thank you for listening either way.
Thank you, Sam. So that's it for the end of the show. Again, if you'd like to subscribe to hear the full show, go to getjoyride.com/podcastUFO. That link's right on our website. So for as little as $1 a month, you can hear the full show. You can listen in iTunes. You can listen on your iPhone, on your Android. There's an app. We'll be back next week with Jesse Marcel III. He's going to be talking about his new indie project, has to do with a flying car. Plus, he'll be talking about UFOs, his father and grandfather, and more. So check back next week at the same time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank a few people today. I want to thank Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse and Bruce Rainier for the music. I want to thank Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page. We have about 20,000 likes on our Facebook page. It's very active. If you want all the latest UFO news, check out Facebook/podcastUFO. I also want to thank Keith for the Dark Matter Radio Network, Alejandro Rojas for the news. And we'll see you right here next week. And this is Martin Willis saying, keep your eyes to the sky.